John Williams here. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Pete Zimmerman's our producer, and I guess you may have heard, I just now noticed that Michael Nesmith, the Monkey singer, age 78, has passed away. You'll probably be hearing some Monkees tunes later today and tomorrow and the next day. That's just the way these things go. So let's check in now with Stephen Esposito, Executive Director, Wealth Advisor, Senior Portfolio Management Director at Morgan Stanley in Lake Forest, a regular guest on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hi, Stephen. Welcome back.
Hi, John. Thank you.
So we knew that the CPI would be coming out today and that the numbers would be higher. And one of the guesses I heard was actually lower than it turned out to be. Inflation is for real. Instead of going from 6.2 to 6.7, the number came in at 6.8, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't rely and expect the analysts to get it right on the nose. They never do. And that's a consensus of estimates on that end of it. But yeah, inflation's here. We know that. I mean, we feel it every day. But it's not something I'm worried about long term.
Why do you say that?
I do think it has more to do with the 100-year experience we just had or we're having with the pandemic. You shut down the world economies like a light switch, and all over the world, each switch isn't turning on at the same time, so it's causing some disruptions in the flow of the economies of the world. You've got different varies within even states. In the United States, it's different. So you've got a disruption we've never seen before. And as you come out of that, you're going to have some aberrations. And I think that's what you've got going on right now. Eventually, I think it will all smooth itself out, and we'll be back to some degree of normal. I don't know if it's going to be in a week or a year or what have you. But I think you got to look at in crisis where the opportunities are. And I think there's opportunities for investors right now to take advantage of something looking out a year or two.
I'm going to ask you about
focusing on a week.
Yeah, I got that. And I'm going to ask you about that in a second. But just for a minute, I wonder if we factored out some things if that number drops. If, say, you take cars out or gas or natural gas, I wonder if there's some things that are really driving that, or is it across the board? Food is up, I know. But again, that may be a function of transportation costs. So I wonder if it's not as bad as it looks, or maybe it's more transitory than it feels.
That's a great point. Used cars up 31%. That's not going to last. When you finally have the supply chain catch up, and already GM's already said they're seeing it catch up already. As that starts to happen and more cars come into the new year in 2022, you will see used car prices come down dramatically. So you're correct. There are some pockets of crazy type pricing on the housing market, things like that. But then you will see that reverse as time goes by. Price, one thing I've always learned in my four decades, price fixes price. And that will happen. So as we start to smooth out and come to degree of some normalcy throughout the world, as you get into 22 and 23, I think you will see the opportunities are right now looking back as to what you can invest in to take advantage of that. But inflation is a concern, and it's eroding people's buying power, which means you need to invest. You can't leave your money in CDs and money market or even treasuries because you're having a negative rate of return over the next year. So that
I think people makes have,
more of a case to invest in the market.
Well, I think people have felt that way for quite a while anyway. Where can you put your money that you get some guaranteed, albeit conservative, growth? It hasn't been in bank accounts or CDs for a while.
Yeah, there is no guarantees. The only guarantee if you want to look at a money market or a T-bill, you're guaranteed to get your money back. All right, that's the guarantee. If you're looking for a guaranteed rate of return, it's really not there. But as an investor, and you're looking out 3 years, which many of my clients, that's what they do, 1, 2, 3, 5 years, we're looking for opportunities like you had 18 months ago. Had a year, 18 months ago, when we were talking, had you went into the cyclical positions and out of the high-flying technology, not necessarily the tech, but the stay-at-home stocks, look at the rotation that has occurred. Look at the set, what's happening in that entire stay-at-home sector that is getting crushed. And there's nothing in many of those, not all, there's nothing underneath to support them, as we said back then. And the cyclicals, which I would be investing in those companies, they're going to benefit from the reopening of the world economies. That's where you should be putting money now. And many of those, by the way, will pay dividends. So you can get some, at least some income in your portfolio through dividends by focusing on those companies. I think you need to look at where we're going to be 1 year from now or 2 years from now in the economy and invest money accordingly.
Stephen, you didn't love the stay-at-home stocks last March? You weren't into that?
No, I suffered from it because I didn't own them, and I don't short sell, so that's something I couldn't benefit from. I instead took advantage of the stocks people were selling to buy those stay-at-home stocks. So you've got to get the cash from somewhere. So it's always just a rotation of capital. It goes from one sector to the other sector. And the idea is to, as Wayne Gretzky said it, you got to skate to where the puck is going, not where it is. And where I think the puck is going 12, 18 months from now is in a normalization of the world, but massive pent-up demand for the kind of companies that are out there, from travel to automobiles to you name it. I think you're going to see, and those companies' stock prices do not reflect that thesis at all, not even close.
I'm brilliant. I said this to somebody else earlier this week. My hindsight vision is 2020. And for instance, when the pandemic hit and all the gyms closed, I thought, well, sure, Peloton will do well because everybody wants to exercise. So Peloton zoomed up to the top. But then I thought, well, eventually Peloton can't sustain that. And as the economies and society opens back up, maybe Peloton will fall. And boy, didn't it. Now, what I've just described is sort of stock timing, and everybody advises against it. And I wasn't that smart at the time. But now, in hindsight, it seems not only logical, almost predictable, but again, this is the advantage of hindsight. I wasn't thinking that way at the time.
Well, it's looking at it the same way, and because when you've been through five stock market crashes, I've survived and fortunately thrived after the fact, and you experience it, you can recognize something you've seen before. Yeah. It's a deja vu scenario. Talking about Peloton specifically, many of these companies that investors all focused on were companies that promised to make money at some point down the road and use a lot of the logic you're talking about. But there was no earnings projected. And when I'm investing in a business, I want to know, what am I paying for a dollar of earnings? What am I paying for a dollar of book value? Those type of things is what I look at as an investor. As a trader and a speculator, which is what you were basically doing, is what that is. That's a different animal entirely. You have to be perfect, and yes, hindsight is 20/20. But we need to say, what are these companies earning? What is the automobile companies going to earn now? What have they earned in a very difficult environment? And if the environment picks up with new cars being delivered, what will happen to those profits? And what am I paying for a dollar in profits today? Many of the stay-at-home stocks never made any money. And if honestly, if they couldn't make money in that environment, what makes you think they're going to make money going forward?
So, let's pause here. Hold on a second, Stephen, because I want to ask you in a minute. I'll pause here. We're going to update our listeners on traffic and how the markets are doing today. But when we come back, give me some ideas about hedging against inflation. You've alluded to maybe some other investment areas you're interested in. So we'll pick it up here in just a minute with Steve. Once again, we have on a phone line Stephen Esposito from Morgan Stanley in Lake Forest. Stephen, you were sort of alluding a little while ago to maybe another investment area that you like. And I know you can't be too specific about calling stocks out per se, but what are you hinting at there?
Again, I think you have a tale of two markets. You have the indexes, which I don't believe reflect the broad market in any way, shape, or form, because they're dominated by a handful of mega capital-type companies that are dominating those indexes. So underneath the surface in those indexes, and even outside of the index, remember the S&P 500 is only 500 companies. The Dow is only 30. The NASDAQ 100 is 100. There are thousands of other companies that are off the radar. And because they're off the radar, they're not getting sponsorship. And that's where the opportunities lie, even some within the indexes. But so I think the opportunity in the broad market with some dividend payers is good. You look in the energy sector, we're not drilling for oil. The demand for oil is going to grow as we go forward when everybody opens up again. So you just saw $85 oil, now it's 71. I don't think it's going to stay at 71. Look at that group that has pulled back. Look at the financials, because the spread between the 2 and the 10-year has narrowed to 80 basis points. That should be more like 1.25 to 1.5, which improves their profitability. I would look at those sectors. In the financial world, and there, the reopening trade, as I mentioned, whether it be the consumer cyclicals, depending on those, the automobiles, the travel sector, et cetera, et cetera. What are you going to do as an individual when we're freed up to be back to normal? And think of the businesses you're going to sponsor and you're going to go to.
Do you like the green sector at all? You mentioned oil, but are you interested in alternative energy as an investment area?
Yeah, that group has, without getting specific, that group as a group has gone up substantially. Many of those stocks are coming down hard now because they simply got overvalued. To me, as an investor, you have to determine when you're buying a company, what do I think the profits are going to be? What am I willing to pay for that profit, a multiple of earnings or book value or revenue? And what is reasonable? And am I overpaying or underpaying rather than worrying about getting on the wagon and missing out? Miss out, there's always another bus. That's what you have to focus on. And in that area, I'm not sure where I can make money that's not already reflected in the prices of those companies. And then I've got to hope they come back and the earnings catch up to the profits. I'd rather have the stock price catch up to the profits. That's the way I've invested for four decades, and it's worked. And I continue to do that. And right now, I see the sectors I mentioned to you, without getting specific, where I think the stock prices have a long way to go to catch up to where I believe the profits will be in a year or two.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's what you have to look at. And I think that's a more conservative way of investing, too, because I'm not speculating. I'm not going out hoping a company will make money in 3 years from now, and I'm paying, again, $25 billion for a company with no profit.
I've got a minute left. You do want your investments, though, to certainly outpace inflation. Do you have any, are there any tricks or areas that are at least good hedges against inflation, or is it the same thing that you're talking about now?
I think, again, because inflation will just eat away at your savings, it's hard to go into anything in the fixed income, so don't go there. But if you're looking at the material sector, if you're looking at the energy, the natural resource sector, that should do well as inflation goes by. But I wouldn't bet all your money, or invest, I should not, maybe depend on the way you look at it. I wouldn't be deploying a lot of capital today on the concept inflation's going to stay around for the next 5 years. I wouldn't do that. That's not the angle I'm taking right now with deploying capital for investors at all.
And is there an EFT then? Is that what you're talking about when you talk about some of these areas? Or are you talking about mutual funds? Or are you talking about stocks specifically?
Stocks specifically, I manage every portfolio of my clients personally. And every portfolio is managed individually. So by the way, I run my business here. And my client base is every portfolio comes in, and I will literally handpick every stock for every single portfolio. No portfolios are identical. So I don't use models or funds in necessarily that way. And I think right now the opportunity for a stock picker is as good as it's ever been because everybody else is doing the opposite. They're buying groups of stocks through, and there's nothing wrong with that if that works for you, but I'm different. I do my own research. I'm a dinosaur in this industry. So I think the opportunity is fantastic right now. I really do.
I think I got my letters wrong on that. I said EFTs. I was thinking of NFTs, but I think I was asking you about ETFs, right?
Right. I assumed you meant ETFs.
Fair enough. Stephen Esposito, Morgan Stanley in Lake Forest. Nice to talk to you as always. Let's visit again soon. Thanks for your help today.
Thank you. Take care.
Let's talk to our friend Dale Buss. He's the veteran financial journalist for Forbes, chief executive and founder, an executive director of the Flyover Coalition. Flyovercoalition.org is the website. It's a site and an organization that looks to promote or at least learn more about business opportunities in the Midwest and the flyover country. Hey, Dale, welcome back. How have you been?
Thanks, John. Great. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good, and I know that you are thinking about EVs today. I think a lot of us are. And I think at first we wondered about the viability of these things, and are the big three or four going to really throw in with that? But they really are, aren't they? These are here to stay.
Yeah, they definitely have. I mean, there was a tipping point, I'd say, that was reached maybe somewhere over the last year where, if you look at the market share of EVs and even plug-in hybrids, which also have a gasoline engine, it was creeping up, but now the market share has started to double. Every year you do that for a few years and suddenly you have to take these things pretty seriously. Yeah. Another thing that's contributed is, some really nice new models that have popularized the idea of EVs for people who, can't afford a Tesla and aren't interested in kind of a weak EV like a Nissan Leaf. So, Ford, for example, had the Mustang Mach-E, which has been very popular. And then they said, hey, you know what, we're going to put our most popular vehicle, the best-selling vehicle in North America, the F-150 pickup, and we're gonna make it battery powered.
Yeah.
And while they haven't started selling them yet.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that decision in just a second. But before we get to the F-150 and a couple of those others, how do they define an EV? Can that be a hybrid, or is that exclusively electric then?
No, it's defined as a vehicle that's, let's say, electrified. So that includes plug-in hybrids, which and it includes so-called regular hybrids, which don't even get plugged in. They just have a motor that gets kind of fed by the energy from braking of an engine-powered vehicle. Plug-ins, you know, normally you'd be able to plug them into the wall and recharge the battery, but they also have a gasoline engine, so you don't have to worry about range anxiety or getting stuck anywhere. And those are definitely included when we talk about the market share of EVs and the whole proposition, because, you know, those are the vehicles that are more popular now and probably will be for some time as consumers kind of confront, you know, do I want to be in a vehicle where I still am out in the middle of nowhere and I lose juice and, you know, I'm stuck there for a week. So, yeah, they're definitely part of the equation.
So the Prius, which is a gas-powered car with that energy assist, if you will, that's an EV, but a Tesla.
That's a regular, known as a regular hybrid
as well. Yeah.
And Tesla is a completely electrified vehicle where if you don't plug it in, it don't go nowhere. So, and then a plug-in is, you know, would be in between those on that continuum.
Yeah, and I presume that the hybrids, you know, a Prius conceptually, is a more popular idea right now than a Tesla. You might think the Tesla is sexier and quicker, but I mean, just in terms of viability, have the cars caught up?
Well, Prius is maybe not a great example because it kind of started out as, you know, wearing a badge on your car saying I'm environmentally responsible, and it's just not a great performer. It's kind of an example of what people are afraid that EVs are. Let's put it that way. You know, very fuel efficient, but not that attractive. You know, not that sumptuous, not that well appointed. Doesn't give you great driving dynamics. That's the old picture of an EV. The new picture is, you know, as I mentioned, let's say a Mustang Mach-E, where you get in that car, it's fully electrically powered. You step on the accelerator and you are off. You better hold on to your head and your hat. That's the kind of performance vehicle that is helping to give EVs a better name. So while you've got, you know, $50,000, $70,000, $100,000 for a Tesla, most people can't or don't want to afford that. What's happening with EVs, and especially now with plug-in hybrids, is, you know, they're moving downscale in price, you know, somewhere in the 20s. There's not that much of a difference between, say, a plug-in version of a vehicle and a regular gas-powered version. So they're getting more democratic, let's say. The obstacles, of course, are many still. You can't go to the corner EV charging station like you can a gas station. And there's still a lot of this so-called range anxiety where you get in an EV and you're like, okay, this thing says it's going to take me 100 miles, but I drive differently than the next person. So am I going to run out after 90 miles, that kind of thing. So those are huge obstacles, but they're being chipped away at in the marketplace by, you know, nice vehicles and the availability of plug-ins.
Did the infrastructure bill include subsidies for those charging stations?
Yeah, there are lots of subsidies there. There also are automakers that entirely on their own, like Tesla, for example, is saying, you know, we're going to put thousands of EV charging stations around the country. You start to multiply these efforts, you know, government, automakers, you know, some state governments wanting to do it. I mean, everybody's kind of chipping in to try to put together this infrastructure, which, you know, is coming one way or another sooner or later. And then the other thing that's clearly coming, as you alluded to at the beginning, is the automakers have kind of pulled a switch on this in the last year or so. They've said, okay, we're not sure how quickly the market's going to develop, but it's definitely going that way. So we're going to spend billions and billions of dollars to build new assembly plants and battery plants, you know, basically all over the heartland is where they are going to be. And that, more than anything, is going to drive EV adoption, because they're not going to put up these plants and not have people drive the cars that they're producing. They'll find a way to make them attractive.
Talk about Rivian a little bit.
Yeah, Rivian is fascinating. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, you know, this company, obviously it was spawned, you know, RJ Scaringe, an engineer in Florida, spawned the idea there, brought it to Michigan to kind of develop his vehicle. He's starting out with trucks and delivery vehicles, which makes very much sense for the market, because it's a commercial application as well as a personal application, and nobody was doing trucks. So then he found this you know, as you know, the empty Mitsubishi plant in Normal in Illinois. I said, okay, I'll make my trucks there. So he's starting to make them. They've made, I don't know, a few hundred, I think. And on that promise and the fact that Ford has invested and Amazon owns 20% of Rivian and is committed to buy 100,000 delivery vehicles in the next few years, on that basis, the Wall Street said, we think this is going to be the biggest, most valuable IPO in a long, long time. And so they went public, you know, like $100 billion valuation a few weeks ago. And they've only built, I think it's fewer than 1,000 vehicles. So it's just an amazing unicorn story. The vehicle, yeah, by all accounts, is really solid and, you know, nicely designed. So it'll be interesting to see if they can come through.
Well, am I going to buy a Rivian sedan or SUV for my family? Is that in the works?
Yeah, I think they're going to broaden out eventually, but they're going to have their hands full with just producing a pickup truck for the general market and the commercial market. And Amazon has ordered essentially delivery vans, maybe on the same platform, I'm not sure, but they have to produce 100,000 of them by 2023. And with a 20% stake in the company, in Rivian, Amazon certainly is going to have a lot to say about what Rivian does in the near future. I mean, the question is, does Rivian's investment in Illinois, you know, lead to more EV investment in Illinois? And I know Governor Pritzker is really hopeful about that with the legislation that they passed, but there's just a lot of competition for these plants, these jobs. You know, places like Kentucky and Tennessee might have a leg up. Michigan, GM just announced a huge new investment near Lansing today in a battery plant. So Illinois has got its work cut out for it.
Yeah. Well, and just one last thing about that. So you alluded to the F-150 electric vehicle. I guess, well, you tell us, was that a slam dunk or was there some risk to Ford saying we're going to make an all-electric pickup truck with their namesake, F-150?
There's huge risk to that. And the decision was made by the previous CEO, Jim Hackett. Jim Farley, who took over from him, is going to be the beneficiary of that decision. But this is the best-selling vehicle in North America, and it has been for, I think, 40 years or something. This is the franchise. And so if you're going to make an electric version, you know, A, you better understand that your core market is going to look at it a little skeptically. But B, even more important, it's got to be as rugged and dependable, you know, stylish as the other one. And I think that's going to work out okay for Ford. If you don't want the F-150 Lightning, as it's called, you know, stick with the gas-powered and diesel-powered Ford F-150 line, because that's going to be around for quite some time.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Dale. You've always got interesting insight. And for those of us here in flyover country, you are always looking out for the best interest of places like Michigan and Illinois and Indiana. That's Dale Buss, the financial journalist. He writes a lot about the auto industry at flyovercoalition.org. We'll talk again soon. Thanks, Dale.
Thanks, John. Always a pleasure. Bye.
12:46. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The Chicago-based IT and security consulting firm Major Key Technologies has acquired Seattle's Valence Group, a tech consulting company. Major Key says the acquisition brings its headcount to more than 650 people and adds new technical capabilities in artificial intelligence, machine learning, data integration, and user-centered design. Valence was launched in 2017, and its engineers and consultants work with commercial and public sector clients across the U.S. Steel manufacturer ArcelorMittal has invested $30 million in a Skokie company whose technology helps ArcelorMittal and other companies turn pollution into ethanol. LanzaTech is already partnering with ArcelorMittal on a biorefinery project at its steel plant in Belgium. It developed microbes that eat carbon monoxide and then converts it to ethanol. The company will use the money for Mittal to speed up development of the technology. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Of all of the foods the other day, one day this week, the business of food of the day was cotton candy. I was so disappointed.
Me too.
You even sounded it. You're like, sorry, that's all I got for you today.
Yeah, I got sugar and hot air. There you go.
Wait, that's me. All right, here's the. Let's see what it is today. It's time for the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Happy Friday to you, Mr. Williams. Over the past couple of months, I've been mentioning the Illinois High School Association's contest to find the best concession stand pork chop sandwich. And we have a winner.
Everybody is just out of our minds happy.
Normal Community High School.
My name is Marty Pickett.
Marty was in the class of 78 and went on to spend 35 years working for the school district and volunteering to cook pork chops at home football games, which he has continued in retirement.
So I kind of bleed orange and black. That's our colors.
Okay, Marty, what's the key to a championship pork chop sandwich?
Well, I think it's our consistency. We use a local butcher, Bloomington Meats. They've been supplying me the pork for 13 years.
Fresh pork, not frozen, and marinated and seasoned so well that most people don't even use barbecue sauce.
They are truly mouthwatering, and we haven't had a complaint in 13 years.
But there's a lot more to this story, and it's about Normal Community graduate Adam Denzer.
He was a bear of a man, but he was the sweetest guy you would ever want to meet.
After graduation, Adam raised pigs about 15 miles outside town and drove the team buses for Normal Community's athletic teams.
He was really involved with the kids. The kids loved him.
But
Adam got killed in a farming accident on his farm.
At every home football game, there is a constant reminder of Adam, a bright orange trailer from which the pork chop sandwiches are served. It is called the A-Train.
Adam played football, and he just ran through the line like a train. They called him A-Train.
Adam's widow, Marie, donated the money for the trailer, and if you attend a Normal Community game, you cannot miss it.
We park it right on the sidewalk where people have to go by us to get into the football stadium.
And while the 78 other schools in the contest sponsored by Illinois pork producers had worthy entries, the people at Normal Community will tell you that their sandwiches are made with a lot of love for the A-Train and his family. From the farm to your belly, what would go better with a pork chop sandwich than a beer? Today's National Lager Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Just a couple minutes here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Let's visit with Alex Grossbeck. He's the president of a company called Fooda. Fooda.com has been in business for about a decade, but I think they've got a smart angle these days, too, in trying to get people back to the office. Alex, you're on WGN. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing well, John. Thanks for having me.
What do you guys do? Tell us what your business is.
Yeah, so Fooda works with companies, buildings. Really, we focus on food at work, and we provide on-premise food solutions for the employees that are at that particular location. Prior to the pandemic, we had primarily focused on expanding geographically. When the pandemic hit, it had certainly had an impact on us. We were focused on food at work, primarily in offices and office buildings. We thought about how we would, pivot what we were doing to be the most sustainable for the long term. And that was for us to expedite, our plans to penetrate in new verticals, such as hospitals and distribution centers, manufacturing, government, our military. Mm-hmm. And we've been really pleased with that decision because we've seen great growth in those segments. And then in the last 6 months, we've seen a really nice uptick in demand from our pre-existing business, with a shift a little bit towards thinking about different ways to organize services to even make them, bigger and bolder than maybe what they provided before as a way to incentivize people to be in the office.
And that's the ticket. A lot of businesses are operating, but a lot of the managers want the employees to come back a little bit more often, and there's a lot of resistance there. But if I knew we had good snacks or sandwiches, so are you like a vending company, or do you show up with a cart of food and I buy it? How does that work?
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways that our services are organized, but at the core of it, it's really about supporting local restaurants in your community. And so the vast majority of our services are oriented towards a local restaurant bringing on food prepared at their restaurant and then made to order for those customers. They can either walk up and buy. In other scenarios, their employer may choose to pay for all of the food or some of the food. We're seeing more and more clients interested in this idea of partially subsidizing or having a discount against the price of the food. So you walk up and you say, I want to buy this salad from Westtown Bakery, who's visiting their office that day, and your employer sponsors $5 off that salad, which is a really compelling benefit for an employee.
No kidding. We got a popcorn machine. I want us to do what you're doing. That sounds, and you know, it wouldn't be just our business on the 18th floor and the 17th floor. Maybe it would be the whole skyscraper we're in, right?
That's right. You know, so oftentimes we'll work directly with a particular company. And other times we'll aggregate all the companies in a building and work with a multi-tenant building to offer services to the entire tenant base. So we can kind of mix and match how we do that.
I want us to do business with you, and I want you to do business with us. It's called Fooda.com. Alex Grossbeck, I hope this isn't the last we hear from you, but I have to say so long for now. Thanks for joining us, and good luck. Continued success, sir.
Thank you so much, John. Have a great day.